Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Oh, it is lunchtime in Calgary. Let's talk hockey right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Kelly Kirsch, Logan Gordon, Riley Pollack, we've got it for you. Our NHL insider, Eric Tuhatchuk, coming in at about 12:30. We had some NHL award nominations. We'll talk to him about what's going on out east, out west. But first, let's find out what's happening with the Flames and talk to Lou.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Peter, Derek Ryan, a no-go today. Tried it yesterday. Give us a bit of an update as best you can about Derek Ryan.
Well, the best we can is just exactly, Kelly, what you talked about, and that is Derek Ryan did give it a go early yesterday. He left. He is not part of what just finished, and that was the first on-ice session today. So early in the process, you would tend to think that his scenario is more injury-related rather than health-related. And, Kelly, I think, you know, those are two very big differences in the era that is COVID-19. So with Derek, this is an incredibly important piece of this hockey team. Wherever you want to pencil him in, whether you want to call him a third line center, this is a player who is mature. This is a player who kills penalties, can be used on the power play, plays against other people's best people. And I think more than anything, in his two seasons as a member of the Calgary Flames, he has shown us all those things in terms of his reliability, his consistency. And this is someone, Kelly, that maybe people aren't talking about in terms of potential importance to the Flames and their playoff success, but they should. And one of the reasons is, I do not really completely care sometimes about where your big game experience comes from. But even going back to his days at the University of Alberta, followed up by his years in Europe, Derek has been exposed and has done well in a lot of key situations. And let's not kid ourselves. Even if we go back to the series last year against the Colorado Avalanche, would you not say that he was one of the best and most consistent Flame players over the course of that five-game series?
Yeah, he was. So, I mean, there was some unsung heroes there. I mean, you guys were talking about Yusuf Alamaki and stuff, and playoffs kind of reveal that. They reveal character and who has it, right?
Well, they do. And again, I just think all the reps that people have in their world matter. And he has some big game, big situation reps. Now, he's only played in five NHL playoff games, but I never discount the road to get to the NHL and how you have done on that road and how you've handled the bright lights of any situation at any level. I truly believe it matters. And I usually find that maybe not necessarily the same impact that you might have had in junior or university hockey, but do you do well when it gets hard? Derek Ryan has always done well when it gets difficult. And one of the reasons is I think his two greatest attributes, his hockey sense and his understanding and his reliability. He's a very consistent guy, Kelly. He really is. He always has been. And that's, in many ways, what has allowed him to do what he has done. Here's another thing. Don't tell me that you do not love this game at somewhat of a different level if you have the fortitude and will and want to stay with it and make the NHL at 29 years of age. Do not discount that road and what he had to do to get to the National Hockey League. Don't ever underscore that. He understands.
Yeah, he knows what adversity is all about. You know,
yes.
A lot of times he could have just said, you know what, maybe this just isn't for me. Maybe I got to got to do something else. And I imagine that crossed his mind, but he stuck with it. And look now, he's in the NHL and a big contributor too. Chatting with Peter Labardius, it is Hockey Central at noon right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's day two of the big group as the Flames have their two groups that go on the ice at different times. So give us a sense of the first group and I guess the second group's about to go on the ice.
Well, the first group is exactly the same outside of Derek Ryan's minor appearance as it was yesterday. So do I think that this is the way that it was drawn up? Not a chance. Not a chance that this was what we were going to see when the plan was drawn up. I truly believe that what we were going to see was more of a balanced type situation with two groups and split more evenly. Now you take where it's at now, which is basically, and we're waiting to see if the same nine guys come out and participate today. Let's not kid anybody, Kelly. That wasn't the original plan. There's just no way that was the original plan. And as we're seeing across the course of the National Hockey League, what would be the word for you that describes the situation the most in terms of what people have to do and guard against? Is it not health?
It's health and being able to change on the fly, as it were.
Yes. So, you know, you read wherever you want into why the groupings are what they are. The only thing I'm going to say on the matter is I truly believe this was not the intended plan. And as every day goes about, that is interesting to observe and continue to witness. In a week where, you know, and Rob Kerr and I talked about it yesterday, and we'll do more of that for the next 2 days. And like Rob, I'm very much in this camp, Kelly, that this week is a refresher, get you up to speed, systems, just understanding exactly what you want to do as a team and taking away any of that. So do I read as much sometimes into the combos and the lines or whatever? No. Then I think next week, depending on the health of your group and where you're at, I see that very much as a competition type week in the program, where at a certain point, I think you'll see two or three scrimmages over the course of next week, depending on players' availability. And then when they go to the hub city, then to me, it becomes more about truly getting tuned in for August the 1st. That's how I see the breakdown as far as the three-week plan. And I feel very strong about that in terms of the preparation. What you can't feel strong about is it's such a fluid and day-to-day in terms of who's playing where or who's in what group. But it's really about building back to get to your main group. Next week for me, depending on, you know, if we continue to see this kind of a split, is competition week as far as I'm concerned.
Peter Labardius at Flames camp right now as they practice at the Saddle Dome. I want to go, we're going to get Logan in the next chunk here to talk to you about a few things like Mark Giordano and Matthew Tkachuk, that sort of thing. But I want to double back because on my drive home, I really enjoyed the Flames roundtable with you and Kersey and Wilsey. And you kind of threw a few things in there, and Rob wouldn't let you, you know, get off the hook. You talked about Travis Hamonic and not just short term, but long term, and wondering what is there maybe a future for him as a Flame, and what does that mean? Can you kind of revisit that? Because I thought it was fascinating how you guys got into that.
Well, listen, the first thing I'd have to say is there is absolutely no question in terms of my ultimate respect for Travis and the decision that he has made. And that is first and foremost in terms of today and why he's not going to be a part of what the Flames are doing to close out 2019-2020. But for everyone, there is a potential future. And Travis does not have a continuance in his contract. And, you know, again, have I personally flat out in the last few days had an opportunity to ask the general manager about Travis and his status? Kelly, I don't really think this is the time or the place to get into the future. And frankly, nobody's going to go there at this point in time. But, you know, it did make me wonder, just because of Travis's impending UFA situation, you know, will there be a future? How much is, you know, the two sides, are they continuing to talk about that? Are they not? Have they reached an impasse, a standstill? So I just, you know, that was one thing that really hadn't been talked about. I don't even know that this is necessarily the time or the place to go there. But in terms of opportunity and the future and your interest in the Flames, you know, with for next season, don't you think it's something to think about?
Yes, I do.
Obviously you do, you would not have asked.
Well, there's a lot of things to kind of consider too. Where the cap is, what's going on, the young guys coming up, who's coming, you know, there's a bunch of that stuff there. I mean, you know, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but this off season is going to be something else in October. I mean, there's just a ton of stuff, the draft and free agency, bang, bang, bang like that. Man, it's going to be interesting. Peter Labardius is our guest from the Saddle Dome as it's Hockey Central at noon. We also have my co-host remotely today. It's Logan Gordon.
Hey, Lou. How are you today?
I'm excellent, Logan.
I'm curious. This is a conversation that we kind of dove into yesterday, me and Rob, and we're both big proponents of leadership and how it'll affect the restart for a lot of teams. And one guy in Calgary that personifies that is Mark Giordano, and I'm just curious what you've seen from the captain and what you've heard from him as we get going here. I think we know that if there was one guy that was going to be ready to lead this team coming back into the restart, it was going to be number five.
Well, Logan, that's the important thing for me, and leadership is incredibly important. And I think in the scenario that we're in right now, it's never been more important. And it's never been a more opportune opportunity for the captain. The captain of this hockey team has played 893 regular season games and has turned into, because of his work and commitment, to one of the finest defensemen in the NHL in his mid-30s, especially not this season, but the season before. Logan, he has played 13 playoff games. 13. He's about to turn 37 years of age. He has not won a playoff series in his National Hockey League career. This is a big time. And there will be more, but these opportunities do not come along every day. And I think if you flat out ask Mark, was he happy with his own personal playoff performance last spring? Not a chance. Not a chance. Now, was he alone? No, not even close. In fact, there were very few players last spring that you could point to and say that they basically held up their end of the bargain. That's really fair. So for Mark, this is an incredible opportunity. He loves this community. He loves this team. He's done the work. There's never been any doubt in my mind that he wants to captain and lead this team to places that they have not been in a long time. And this is another opportunity for him to do it. Is he excited about it? Well, you're about to hear.
Oh yeah. Hockey's basically all of our lives right now. And playing in the NHL, you don't want to take it for granted. And during a pause like that, you miss it so much. And with the position we put ourselves at the end of the year, we wanted to keep our Stanley Cup, and now we're given that opportunity. So it's very thankful. Very thankful to be given that opportunity. And this year, we're going to try to make the most of it, and we're out for a little redemption from last year.
That was actually Matthew Tkachuk. Yeah.
Riley, do we have Mark?
There was so much uncertainty, and now there's a lot of excitement, I think, the last couple of days, knowing that we're going to be able to get back and get back into camp and hopefully play. I don't know. I mean, the 3 or whatever, it's been 4 months off. Feels definitely weird to jump into a playoff series, but everyone's fresh, and it sort of feels like, you know, the start of a regular camp today, being in here and getting back out on the ice and going through video. So I'm sure it'll ramp up quick. I think these next 2 weeks are going to fly by, and then we'll be right into the hopefully right into the hub city and right into the thick of it.
So there you have it, with the captain of the hockey team and Logan Kelly. This is a big time for Mark. This is a big time for the hockey team. And he is going to be front and center in whether the Calgary Flames make a long, significant run. Like I said, Mark Giordano has not won the playoff series in his career. You don't think he doesn't want to change that starting on August the 1st? Because call it a play-in round, whatever. This is the playoffs. We're getting ready for the playoffs. You call it whatever the heck you want. And I don't diminish the fact that, you know, there's still going to be 16 teams left and you need to become one of those. This is a playoff series. That's what they're getting ready for. That's what he's getting ready for.
Yeah, and that's it. Reveals a lot of things, the playoffs, and this is going to be a different sort of scenario. We've never had a playoff round before. We've never had a, you know, it's been a while since the NHL's had a best of five, a long, long time. This is going to be interesting times, and you know, with no fans in the stands, this is going to be one of those things where you can look at it as daunting, Lou, but you can also look at, hey, man, this is a hell of an opportunity we've been afforded here.
Isn't this all about embracing? Kelly, haven't our chats for just over a week been about embracing and blocking out the noise? It is.
Yep.
I'm not going to make it any simpler, because I don't think it requires much more than that. This is about winning a hockey event and all that goes with it. And yeah, the focus for sure. And it should be. It's different. It's different every single day, and it's going to be. But you will never convince me that the teams and the players that do the best will be the players who are completely 100% all in on the task and being the best that they can be, and not allowing all the rest. And there's a lot. I'm not discounting that part. This is different. And it's going to test people in a huge, huge way. It already is. Teams are changing plans. They're already practicing different. People aren't available to them. This is different. This is unlike anything we've ever done. So your ability as an individual, and then more importantly as a group, to find your way, greatest challenge. But what an opportunity. And again, I'll say it a million times while I'm still on the air during this process. I'm not sure I've ever been more intrigued by a playoffs.
Oh,
ever.
I'll tell
ever
you.
In my whole life. And
so
I've
many different things, right? There's so many different scenarios. You've got these guys who have been off for a while, the chemistry. You've got teams that probably didn't really deserve to be there, but they are. They have a chance to redeem their season. It is fascinating on so many different levels. If you like to gamble, you can really take some long shots, and I don't think they are long shots, because anything can happen. Do I think we're going to have an Arizona-Florida Stanley Cup? I don't think so. I don't think it's going to get that weird, but who knows, Lou? Like, who knows?
Who knows?
Right?
Isn't that the beauty of sports, Kelly?
Yeah. Well, like, exactly.
Like, it is. That's the beauty. That is truly the beauty of sports, is that we can analyze it. We can break it down. We now have far more numbers and analytics at our, you know, availability to discuss, break down, and analyze. But it's still the greatest theater on earth, sports and playoffs.
Yeah, for sure.
It's the greatest. It's the greatest. It really is.
Lou, when you were talking yesterday that the practice seemed like, if someone would have just blindfolded you and said, okay, we're going to just plop you into the Saddle Dome and this is October, it sort of felt, you said, fairly normal. Day two, with the first initial adrenaline gone and all that energy gone, Is the pace better, worse, the same? How would you describe
it? It got ramped up today.
Okay.
It got ramped up again today. Which, again, if I go back to, you know, a year ago, September, it would be the same. You know, you get your feet wet on day number one. There's good intensity. Guys are excited to be back, be around more of their teammates. you know, and then things ramp up. And I think things are going to ramp up even more this time because of what's at stake, Kelly. This is, again, the difference in this situation is you're getting ready for not opening night. You're getting ready for night number one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's different. So it has to ramp up fast. But again, as we've talked about, it's also about managing your group. So here's an example from the first on-ice session. A number of key veteran players, Giordano, Lindholm, Brody, and a couple of other key performers did not come back after the flood. So managing your people and your best people, getting the work in, but keeping them fresh. This is all about ramping up to August 1st, both individually and as a team. And that's an interesting thing to analyze, including a gentleman who's going to be a real focus on our hit tomorrow, and that is Elias Lindholm.
Okay.
Because, Kelly, for a long time, whether you think he is their best player, I think he is their most important forward. And so he does everything. He does everything. And he plays more minutes up front than anybody. He, to me, is their most important forward. Is he? There's a difference, though, Kelly. I didn't say he's their most impactful or their most potentially impactful forward. I think that's Matthew Tkachuk. So we're going to talk tomorrow in part about both of those individuals and their importance to this particular hockey team.
Yeah, Elias checks a bunch of boxes for the Flames. He really does.
All
right?
of them.
Yeah. So that's, you need guys like that. Absolutely you do. Okay, we're going to let you go. I know you're doing double duty today. You and Rob Kerr going to drive Calgary home with some good stuff. I loved listening to you guys yesterday and today. Going to be more of the same. Looking forward to it. So enjoy the next, 90 minutes or so, and have some fun with Robbie later on today.
I will. Kelly, one quick update.
Sure.
The same 9 guys are back out for session number 2. So nobody else missing outside of Dubé and Robinson again. And then off the top, we talked about Derek Ryan trying it yesterday. Left early, didn't participate. So the groups have stayed the same today.
Day 2, it's good.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Okay, here we go. It is Hockey Central at noon right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We got Logan Gordon. We got Riley Pollock. We're going until 2 o'clock. 1 o'clock, we'll have hour 1 of Pinder and Steinberg, and kind of a neat show we got for you there. Rob Kerr is back. Love hearing that guy. He's back at 2 o'clock. He said he was nervous going on the air. It didn't sound like that to me. It sounded like he got shot out of a cannon, which we love. So more Kersey coming up after 2 o'clock. And next, we'll go down east and talk to one of our NHL insiders. He's Eric Tkachuk. He's next on Hockey Central at noon right here on Sportsnet 960.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
Kelly Kirsch, Logan Gordon, Riley Pollock, as we roll through your lunch hour. Time to talk to our NHL insider, Eric Tkachuk. Down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Check them out at 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. And Eric, I assume you're still in Toronto sweltering in the heat, or has it calmed down for you a little bit?
No, the weather's much improved. I think it's going to get warmer again, but we've had a blessed relief from the heat wave, and I think everybody's mood is a lot better as a result of that.
Well, let's kind of get into it as it's day 2 of the training camps, and media types have had to kind of be a little sneakier about what's going on. We're finding out about who can and who can't play, and also the opt-out list and another there've been a few guys. I thought there might have been more. Are you surprised at the list being as small as it is, with the just a handful of guys saying they're not going to play this summer?
Well, first of all, it was a very difficult thing to even anticipate, like what the numbers would be. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, let's say that, you know, the pool of players is 750, and we have no idea over the past 4 months what may have gone on in someone's life. So, like, I mean, you know, Travis Hammond is a real good example. I think people were aware that they had, you know, that he and his wife had a daughter with an immune system that could potentially be compromised if either of the parents developed COVID. And so, like, it's reasonable for the Hammond, you know, for Travis and for the Hammonds to make the decision that they made. I mean, that's you have to put health and safety and family and those things ahead of everything, right? I mean, in my office in Calgary, I have a thing on the wall that says, you know, family and health matters the most. Doesn't mean that other things don't matter, but everything else matters less, right? So that's how I live. And so when I see someone make a decision based on health and family, like, I'm fully 100% supportive of it, right? So, but I don't know how many out of a player pool of 750 have those concerns. Now, you know, I think what most people will tell you is that there is an ethic in professional sport, and especially an ethic in hockey, where, you know, you do whatever you can to get yourself into the fray. And this, I think there's an element of intrigue, right? I mean, if you're a player who's made the playoffs, even, you know, I mean, look at Chicago, Montreal. I mean, those guys were preparing for vacation, and now they've been given another opportunity. It's sort of like, you know, here's a ticket to the dance. And you have the same chance as the 16 other teams in the play-in round. And if you have the kind of competitive instinct and fire in your belly that most people have to have to get to this level of professional hockey, it's like, let's make the most of it. And let's, you know, move heaven and earth where possible to get involved. So that's a long answer I'm not surprised. But on the other hand, if 50 players had opted out, and 50 of them had good reasons relating to health or family, I would have been fine with that too. So it was just a really hard one to forecast, Kelly. There was no way of really knowing what was going on in people's lives for the past 4 months to predict if that number would be 5 or 50.
Yeah, and it's funny when we talk about, and you mentioned Chicago, and you talk about Montreal. I mean, those guys, I think, should worry teams, because they got nothing to lose. They're playing with house money right now. This is like, hey, if we get bounced out, hey, we weren't going to make the playoffs anyway. We win a best of five. We get hot. We get our goalie hot. We get ourselves into the dance. Look out. We get some momentum. I mean, how can you not think that is just an opportunity right there for you?
Yeah, well, and house money would have been the term that I used, and I think that probably a lot of people would use that, because, no, that's exactly right. I mean, it's different if you're a team, you know, like Calgary and Winnipeg, for example, are two teams that were going to go down to the wire in those final dozen or so games in the regular season to decide who was going to make it and who wasn't going to make it. So there was going to be a level of intensity in those 3.5 weeks of games that were ultimately canceled that would have been really fun to watch. And you know, like, I couldn't sit here today and positively guarantee you the Flames are in the playoffs, because they were right on the cusp, you know, and Winnipeg similarly, you know, they would have, they were technically outside of the playoffs on a percentage basis, but they'd won 4 games in a row. They picked up a couple of players at the trade deadline in DeMelo and Eakin that looked like they were really helping them. It looked to me like they were really rounding into form. So who knows how that final 3.5 weeks, but whether you were one of those teams that was on the bubble and in a, you know, in a tight race to make the playoffs, whether you're one of those teams that, as you suggest, they're playing with house money, or even if you're one of those teams like Boston that has, you know, invested a whole lot of sweat equity into the season, have a championship window that feels like it's open, but maybe only for a short period of time. Chara's not getting any younger. You know, Krug might leave as a free agent. You know, they were the best team in the NHL by a substantial amount. You know, like, we sometimes forget teams at the other end of the spectrum. You know, like, in some ways, there's been more of a focus, interesting, isn't it, on Chicago and Montreal, 23rd and the 24th place, than on the team that's at the other end, the number one team. Like, put yourself in the shoes of the Boston Bruins. You know, Pasternak having that unbelievable season. You know, Bergeron, great again. You know, Marchand, maybe not as dominant as he was last year, but real good. You know, the goaltending was excellent. They've got really good pieces there. I mean, they are the best team in the NHL. You know, now there's, you know, how often does the best team win? Well, you know, almost never, right? But, yeah. But I mean, think about how motivated they are. You know, for a time it looked like, you know, that all of that work and all of that performance and execution that they managed this year, because they were real good for just about the, you know, the start to the season to the finish, one little hiccup in there. You know, they will be as motivated as anybody. So the motivation will be different across the different spectrums of where you lined up. But I think that the only thing that's the same is that every one of those 24 teams are going to think, hey, someone's going to be, you know, skating around the ice with the Stanley Cup. Why not us, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, everyone's talking about, you know, Chicago and Arizona and Florida, all these teams.
Yeah.
But then you get, you know, St. Louis and Boston who've been there. They've got that rest and,
yeah,
you know, all the different variables. It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes loose. I want to switch gears a little bit, Eric, and talk about the Ted Lindsay Award. The finalists were announced earlier today. Not a surprise. Leon Draisaitl, Nathan MacKinnon, and Artemi Panarin have been named finalists. This is the award that's voted on by the NHLPA. Is this Draisaitl's to lose, or does Nathan MacKinnon have so much respect with the players that he might get the nod?
You know, Kelly, that's a really great question, because, like, we don't, obviously, as you say, we don't vote for that. We vote for the heart. And I haven't checked my ballot, but I believe that those are the three names that were on the top of my Hart Trophy ballot. So I think a lot of people are probably aligned in their thinking that if you look individually at what those players meant to their respective teams, I mean, you know, the Rangers weren't going to make the playoffs in this, in you know, if it was a 16 team, a regular 16 team playoff. But the fact is, I mean, Panarin was just outstanding. One of those rare free agents that goes in and actually lives up to their billing in the first year. That's so hard to do, right? Because those players are always trying to, you know, justify the contract, and sometimes when you're trying to do too much, you know, you never really do enough. And so for him to go in there and just sort of, you know, set that whole market on fire and become such a popular player in such a short period of time was really, to me, an extraordinary accomplishment. Nathan MacKinnon, you know, I mean, he, you know, to me, the year that Taylor Hall won the MVP, I had MacKinnon first on my ballot. That's a matter of public record. I think there are times when he is the best player in the NHL. I know, you know, Connor McDavid is, you know, probably most of the time is the best player, but there are times when MacKinnon gets on a roll when he is fantastic. And I think that,
like in the playoffs in the first round last year, you mean?
Well, there's a real good example. That's a real good example. But how about this, though? You know, when you think about the number of games that Rantanen missed with injuries, you know, he's back playing on that top line right now. But, you know, like if you read the quotes from Rantanen, he was hurt like a couple of times. It was just never right, you know. And then Landeskog missed a long period of time. And to me, the measure of, you know, the most valuable player to a team is that, like, Colorado hardly missed a beat, you know. And that was, I mean, sometimes it was Matt Calvert up there on the wing, and sometimes it was, you know, Burakovsky, and you know, just a changing cast of forwards that were playing with MacKinnon, and he just resolutely played the way he did. I mean, he was tremendous, right? And
you could say that for Draisaitl too, couldn't you?
I was going to say, and I haven't even mentioned the guy that's going to win the thing, which is Leon Draisaitl, who, you know, again, when you think about, you know, there was a period of time where McDavid, you know, missed, you know, a fairly significant chunk of time, and if Draisaitl hadn't pulled that team along, you know, I mean, in a team sport, it's hard to say by himself, but he dragged that team into you know, competitiveness for the period of time that McDavid was absent, and that's probably the difference between, well, I mean, I guess they would have made the playoffs in a 2014 playoff, but they might not have. Like, you know, when you lose a guy like Connor McDavid, the bottom can fall out pretty quickly. And so the way Draisaitl performed when McDavid was out of action, I think, is a reason why he's in the mix there. So I myself believe that Draisaitl will win the thing. Just because, you know, a lot of times the players will choose the, you know, the scoring champion. But boy, they're three really good candidates. And for sure, the players got it. In my mind, anyway, the players got the right three.
And there's no way Panarin splits the vote in any sort of way, right?
I don't think so. No, I think Panarin, I think when they publish the results of the votes, you'll find that it's pretty. It's a two horse race as far as that would be my forecast. It would be a two horse race, and the Panarin would be third of three.
Eric DeHatchuk is our guest here on Hockey Central at noon, right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. I'm Kelly Kirsch. He is Logan Gordon.
Eric, do you think that some of these teams? I think that we had this discussion yesterday with me and Kelly, and that, you know, there's a lot of built-in excuses for teams, and they might not be willing to, you know, judge their entire year's success based on the play-in round. But I feel a few of these teams, maybe like Tampa Bay and Toronto, who are in a Stanley Cup window, you know, if they were to lose in, for Toronto, the qualifying round, or Tampa Bay another first-round exit, would probably be a disappointment in all of the nuances and the differences of this tournament, and a break in between probably wouldn't matter too much to management there, and they'd probably be willing to shake things up. Do you think that applies to those sort of teams?
Well, like, again, I always like to go on a case by case basis, and I'm not sure that I would necessarily lump Toronto in with Tampa, because I do think that even with the expectations having arisen in Toronto after they drafted Austin Matthews, if you look at the core group there, most of those key guys, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, are all signed for an extended period of time. And most of them, I think, still have an upside. Like, I think Mitch Marner can get better. I think Austin Matthews can get better. I think Austin Matthews, once it starts to tail off for Alex Ovechkin, I think Matthews will be one of those guys that is perennially challenging for the Rocket Richard for, you know, a 5 to 7 year period. So I'm not 100% convinced that Toronto's window is closing. I think it's just actually starting to open. And I also think the other factor there is that, you know, in a traditional playoff, I see Boston as a team that you know, is getting a little bit older, and some of those key important pieces might not be there. So of course there's pressure on those teams to win and succeed. Especially Toronto. I mean, they were so bad for so long, and they've edged back to respectability. And I think most fans don't want to hear any excuses. Once you're a competitive team, it's like, okay, you know, we should be challenging for a championship, and they haven't been able to get out of the first round. I think that's a tricky matchup though against Columbus. You know, Columbus, you know, they were far better than the sum of their individual parts for most of the season, and they had to be because they lost all those players, and then they had a whole bunch of key people hurt. So it'll be interesting to see. Like that actually is a series that I'm very interested in seeing the outcome of, because I think that, you know, Columbus played that underdog card really, really well during the regular season this year, really well. And John Tortorella got an awful lot out of those guys, and you know, like, he should be at least a candidate for coach of the year. But I think that, you know, with everybody getting back to health, and there may even be a little bit of pressure on them. So how they respond, because, you know, on paper you have to say, you know, Toronto is the better team in pretty much every category, except I guess if you count Seth Jones, and maybe give the edge a little bit to Columbus and goal. So I don't know that it necessarily is that big a deal in Toronto. Now, Tampa, that's a different story. I think because of the expectations that were established last year when they ran away with the league and then failed in the playoffs, I think there will be a tremendous amount of pressure on them. I think that right from the very start of this season, it didn't matter what they did in the regular season. It only mattered what they did in the playoffs. And if you'll recall, through about the third week of December, they were a very, very average team. And then they went on a roll, and I think Vasilevskiy had a stretch there where he didn't lose a game in about 20 or 25 starts. I know, because I traded him just before he went on that stretch. So I had to watch Craig Custance get every one of those Andre Vasilevskiy wins. So I do think that if there's another failure in Tampa, I'm not sure that there will be a reckoning. Like, I think it'd be ridiculous to fire the coach there, but I think that the disappointment in that market will be palpable, and maybe more palpable than any other, if they have another early exit in the playoffs.
Is there a team that sticks out to you, Eric, as one of those bubble playoff teams that, you know, probably wouldn't have been in it if it wasn't for an expanded playoffs, that doesn't really have anything to lose, that could make a run at it? Any team stick out to you particularly?
Yeah, Florida, because I think so much of what, like, I love their personnel, and yet they had a very, very average year, in part because, you know, as opposed to Artemi Panarin, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky, the other big Columbus free agent, went into Florida and just couldn't get it going. Like, he just absolutely couldn't figure it out. He was a square peg in a round hole for a guy that's won the Vezina twice. It was, you know, like he kept thinking, okay, next month he's going to turn it around. Okay, next month he's going to turn around. He's going to get comfortable. He's, you know, it's just going to, and it never really did. It never really did, you know, and they were looking at, you know, all kinds of goaltending options there just because Bobrovsky was struggling so much. So I did note that, you know, on the first day of camp, Joel Quenneville went out of his way to talk about how good Bobrovsky looked. Now, I don't know how you can tell from one practice, and the answer is you can't. But
he better look good.
You can be sure that there's going to be a whole lot of positive talk about Sergei Bobrovsky. But to your question, if they get the goaltending, you know, if you look at their, you know, I mean, up front, they have a dazzling offense. I mean, you know, Barkov, Huberto had a great year. He'll be on some MVP ballots, you know, and then even secondary guys like Hoffman and Dadonov, you know, they made that trade at the deadline to move Trocheck out. I love Eric Hall as a player. I think he's a really useful piece, really a good player for Vegas the year that they went to the finals. So if you're looking for a dark horse, yeah, Florida's the one. I mean, I think we talked about this a couple of months ago, but they're the team that interests me. They're better on defense than you think. I mean, Ekblad is just one of those under the radar really good players, and Yandle is a power play quarterback that can do, you know, on some level what you know, the Krugs and the Tyson Berries can. So they've got pieces. And the other thing that I like about them is, you know, Joel Quenneville as a coach. And I think there's an awful lot of us that believe that coaching will be more of a factor in these types of in this type of tournament than it might otherwise be. It's bench coaching, it's motivation. I mean, I go back to that year that Chicago won the cup in 2013, coming out of the lockout. Same thing, you know, you needed to hit the ground running and you needed to be good right away. And what did Chicago do? I think they went 24 games without a loss. They were 21-0-3 in the first 20. So they went half a shortened season, albeit, without losing a game. And that was with Joel Quenneville behind the bench. So he knows, I believe, how to push the right buttons to get a team out of the gate fast. And that's what you're going to need if you're one of those teams like Florida that, you know, that is kind of hovering there in the weeds. Nobody's really talking about them probably, but, you know, they got good pieces and they got a great coach. And if the goaltender holds up, and especially if he does more than hold up, but if he goes in there and plays at the level that Sergei Bobrovsky can play at, I think they could be really dangerous.
One more for you here, Eric, and I'm curious what you made of the two signings out of Russia yesterday. Kirill Kaprizov signs with the Minnesota Wild, and another Russian goaltender enters the league as Ilya Sorokin signs with the New York Islanders. He'll get a year off of his entry-level contract this season, even though he's not eligible to play. Minnesota's been waiting on Kaprizov for a long time, 5 years, I believe, now since they drafted him. Any coincidence as to why we saw both of them signing now or just the right time for them to come over? I'm curious what you made of those two signings.
Well, I think, you know, sort of putting aside the, you know, the worldwide pandemic right now, I think that was the hope and the expectations of both those organizations. I mean, you know, again, completely different sort of situations. I think the Islanders had targeted, you know, Sorokin as their goaltender of the future, and they believe that he can, you know, do for them, you know, what you know, some of these great young goaltenders that have come into the NHL, you know, the Gibsons and the Hellebucks can do. That they just think that he has the credentials to be great. You know, we saw how well Shesterkin played for the Rangers, and I believe that you know, I mean, I haven't seen the you know, the kid play, but the people that I talk to who follow Russian hockey very closely say that he's the real deal and he could come in and be a star in the league. So I think, you know, the goal there was to try to get him over as soon as possible. And, you know, under terms of this new CBA, that, you know, it became a doable thing. Now Kaprizov is, you know, different. As you say, you know, when Minnesota was sort of sorting out what they wanted to do with their expansion protected list for the Vegas expansion draft, one of the reasons that they felt that they could, you know, part with a guy like Kahala was because they felt that, you know, that they thought they would have Kaprizov in their lineup right now. So they had to wait on him. But by all accounts, he too is the real deal, like, you know, an absolute star in the KHL. And of course, you know, the only sort of rider in all of these conversations is how do they adapt to North America? Because, you know, there are times when a player can have you know, all the credentials in the world in the KHL. And if they cannot fit into the style of play, or if the lifestyle becomes more of a challenge than they can handle, you know, it takes some longer than others. Like Panarin was a hit right away. Remember when he came over and played with Chicago, he was a hit right away. Last year, there was all this talk about Gusev, you know, traded from Vegas to the Devils. And it took a little bit longer. I mean, he was the same thing, you know, a star in Russia. Everybody said this guy would come in and be an impact player at the NHL level. Didn't really happen. Good player, but took him a little while. So, you know, it may well be that he'll be a better player in his second year than his first. But, yeah, these guys, you know, by all accounts, should come in and be real special players for both Minnesota and the Island.
All right, Eric, we will we'll let you go. We're getting closer to, we got to pick your brain about, you know, fantasy drafts and that kind of stuff. We'll maybe wait for next week to that, but there's lots of things, you know, talking about playoff brackets and all that kind of good stuff. Looking forward to maybe getting to that conversation next week. So have a great day, and we'll talk to you on Thursday.
All right, thank you.
There we go. Eric Dehatchuk, one of our NHL insiders right here on Hockey Central at noon. It's Kelly Kirsch, Logan Gordon, Riley Pollock. We're going till 2 o'clock. Rob Kerr in after 2 o'clock. You'll be joined by Peter Labardius at 4. We'll have all kinds of stuff from the Flames training camp, and, you know, they'll probably stir it up like they always do. It was fun yesterday. It'll be more fun today. I just know it. Okay, we'll take a break, and we will set up the 1 o'clock hour. The 1 o'clock hour is going to be different. We have some different things on there, and looking forward to it. That's coming up next right here on Hockey Central at noon.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
Kelly Kirsch, Logan Gordon, Riley Pollock. We are here, right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Lots of ways you can listen in. You can do it on the old radio, 960 on your AM radio. You can stream us at sportsnet.ca/960. You can download the Sportsnet app and just go to listen, or you can get the Radio Player Canada app. New and improved that it is. All kinds of radio stations on there, including us. Take us with you wherever you go this summer, especially when Logan Hockey starts in August. The August-long weekend is going to be busy here at the Mighty 960. Going to be buzzing a little bit, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine that we'll have anything to play with six NHL games and baseball and basketball. I don't think you'll hear much of us talking.
Yeah, and we won't be complaining about, there's nothing to talk about, because that is that is not the situation. Well, guys, you know what? I got a little bit of a buzz on for what people were, you know, I think we had a hit record, as we like to say, with our CFL talk. We probably could have stretched that out for a couple hours. Rod Peterson said some good stuff, some crazy stuff. Logan didn't like a lot of my ideas, but that's fine.
It's true.
Yeah, it's one of those deals. But as always, if it's a good idea and it works out, then I take full credit for it. Then I'll just blame somebody else for it. So yeah, I thought it was neat. I think maybe the consensus, what there's got to be some change. No matter what happens, you hope they hang in there, but it might be an opportunity for that league to turn things around, Logan. So I hope they do. And still waiting for some news about the whole Hub City thing. That might have to wait till next week. I hear Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, maybe here or something. I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see what transpires and how long of a season it is and what the football looks like and who can play. Lots of question marks there.
Yeah, it was a fun hour with Rod talking all things CFL and, you know, brainstorming ideas from three guys that have, you know, long watched the CFL and have been a proponent for it. And, you know, I think all three of us could agree that, you know, it needs to change, but we still wanted it around and, you know, still love the league and don't want to see it go anywhere. So it'd be interesting to have that conversation maybe in a couple of weeks when we get some more news.
Well, I was thinking about other sports that have had their heyday and have gone away, and the one thing that sort of reminds me of sports that have had their heyday and then have passed down the old torch a little bit is, okay, horse racing used to be massive. Like, you know, long before I was into sports, like it was the thing in the 50s, 60s, 70s. It was a big, big deal, and it just isn't as big as it used to be. Boxing the same way. And I think those are two sports that were very kind of set in their ways. Let's keep it this way. Let's not change things. And, you know, they didn't. And that's where they're at now. So I think the opportunity is there for the Canadian Football League. The other thing I want to talk about is our guest coming up at 20 after 1. So we're about 20 minutes away from Carleton University sent me this deal today, and they have founded the Ontario Post-Secondary Esports League, a first-of-its-kind league. It's going to launch this fall. It's the kind of sports you can play because there's no contact with anybody. And obviously a bit of a vacuum, and it's for Ontario, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. But so they've got, you know, a team, the Ravens, are in the Overwatch League already, and Hearthstone and League of Legends and Rocket League. So we're going to ask a little bit about that, because I know there's you know, everyone keeps talking, oh, esports is big. It's getting bigger. It's going to be a thing. You got to do it. And I think it is, but I just don't know right now if it's, you know, you guys would know, you're younger, you're more into this kind of stuff. Is esports, are they sports fans or are they gaming fans?
I think that there's a mix. There's fans that are fans of sport, watching, you know, NHL or NFL esports. But then for the most part, I think it's video game fans that are watching, especially in this this league, the Ontario League, where they're playing games like Overwatch and all that sort of stuff. They're more gaming fans than sports fans.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. And it's, you know, it's with the university, so I think that's kind of interesting too. So we'll see if that sort of goes across. So we'll have that guest. You've got a guest lined up too.
Yes, Darren Haynes of The Athletic and contributing to the Canadian Press is going to join us at 1:45, get another perspective on camp and being back to covering the Flames, and get a good idea of what we saw from the second group today as well. So I thought we'd bring Darren on to close out the 1 o'clock hour.
And we can also talk to him about his amazing officiating job at the Beer League game back when we could meet people and do stuff.
I didn't know he was an official for that.
He was brilliant and a lot better than Corey Sarich. Corey and Commodore were celebrity refs, and they play a lot of hockey in their day, but I thought they might be familiar with the rules a little bit better than they were, but I guess not. But
they called that one in, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. It was pretty fun. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll get an update. Lots going on. Lots stuff happening. You know, Sportsnet, they're jumping up and down because they're going to have a live sporting event to put on today. It's like, it's not recorded. We don't know the result of it as the Blue Jays inter-squad game goes tonight. What, 4:30, Riley? Is that our time, 4:30?
Yeah, 4:30 our time on Sportsnet West, I believe, is where you can catch it. I think it's only a six-inning game. I don't think it's the full nine, but, you know, it's live sports.
It's live, and it's Blue Jays, and it's people, so that, you know, if you want to go to a pub, you could probably do it, right? That's an excuse where at least you're not going to watch something that you know that, oh, here's where Bautista throws his bat. You know that part. That stuff's coming up. Okay. Notice that here at the station, we also have these hockey cards. Came in a box and was addressed to Ryan and Boomer. And they are snappy looking cards, I'll tell you. As we've got this contest going on this week and next week, your chance to win a box of Upper Deck hockey cards. Now, they're going to choose the card of the day. They're doing it in the morning show. And if you think you know, they'll have some vague clues, and then they'll narrow it in, and then boom, you send it away. 960-960. If you win, you're going to get the stuff sent right to your door, just like Ryan did, right to your address. And yeah, this week it's Upper Deck Stature Series. And then next week in the afternoons, it'll be the OPG Platinum Series. They're very snappy, I'll tell you. Look for that. Upper Deck, collect the best, home of the world's greatest athletes. Visit upperdeckstore.com. We'll take a break and get hour number one of Pinder and Steinberg before Rob Kerr starts to kick over the furniture at 2 o'clock, right here on Sportsnet 960.